That's the role of resilience. I thought, okay, I can do this. I can talk about steps 1, 2, and 3 in the light of resilience. I found something that I'd like to share with you and encourage to change. I always like to refer to the literature because so much of it was written by other Al-Anon members, you know, and it's nice to connect with other people who are going through the same kinds of things that I am going through, I was going through and still go through. On January 14th, page 14, Encouraged to Change, it said, I learned in Al-Anon that I'm bound to fail to make someone else stop drinking because I am powerless over alcoholism. Others in the fellowship had failed as well, yet they seemed almost happy to admit it. In time, I understood. By letting go of this battle, we were sure to lose. We became free. Gradually, I learned that nothing I did or did not do would convince my loved one to get sober. I understood intellectually, but it took time before I believed it in my heart. Frequent Al-Anon meetings, phone calls, and reading of literature were indispensable to this learning process. When I got to Al-Anon, and I think it's been about 24 years ago, I came because I lived with two people who were abusing, well, alcohol and drugs, my husband and my youngest son. It was easy for me to say I was powerless over my husband. He had told me many years ago that he already had one mother, so I could kindly keep my opinions and my advice to myself. He never listened, so, you know, I'm powerless over him. That was easy. But to say I was powerless over my son who was 13, that was a challenge. At the time, I don't know if some of you who are older will probably remember this. There was an actor named Carol O'Connor, and he lost his son to a drug overdose. And he used to do these commercials on television where he would just, you just see his face and he would say, do everything you can to get between your children and drugs. Everything. So I took that as my mandate. You know, I tried anything I could think of, anything anybody suggested. I just didn't believe that I was powerless over this child. I got a sponsor and I started to work the steps. And as I said, it was easy to say my life was unmanageable because I was living with two people I thought were really crazy. The stuff that was going on was insane. So that was easy, the easy part. And the easy part, it was easy to say I was powerless over my husband. But I had to do a lot of work to get to a point where I could say I was powerless over this 13-year-old boy. Mostly it was just trying everything, like taking him to AA meetings, dropping him off, coming back and picking him up after the meeting. And a few days later, someone would tell me, oh, did your son say that he saw me at the movies? You know, and I knew as soon as I left, he did too. That's the same thing he did with school. I'd drop him off at school and come back and pick him up. And then the school would call and say he was not there that day. So, you know, I got these little outside hints that maybe I was really powerless. You know, it was a hard lesson. And it was a difficult time. I needed to keep coming to meetings. My sponsor who was working with me said to me, there's a lot going on in your life. So I think you need to increase your meetings. You need a lot of Al-Anon to help you get through this. And so that's what I did. I was going to 5 meetings a week at the time. And I went through so many ups and downs with that young man. Always thinking, okay, now I've got it. I really understand that I'm powerless, but things are okay now because I've got him in this rehab program. It's going to be okay. That's what I needed to do. And he would flunk out of the rehab. He flunked out of more rehabs than I can even mention, but it was an ongoing process of me learning that I was powerless, but I was okay with the steps. You know, I managed to get through step one the first time and got to my second step, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I didn't have a problem with the power greater than myself. I had a relationship with the God of my understanding. I visited him in church every Sunday. You know, I spent an hour with him. So I had this thing that I grew up with my entire life. I had this higher power. And that's what I used the first time I did step two. The part that really threw me was being restored to sanity. I didn't think I was crazy. I thought I lived with crazy people, but I was the only one who wasn't crazy. My sponsor said to me, "Do you ever get in the car and ride with somebody you know is drunk?" Well, yes, I've done that. "Have you ever let your children ride with somebody you know was drunk?" Yes, I have done that too. So, okay, maybe I am crazy. Then I heard a definition of insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, yeah, I did that too. You know, I really did that too. I kept trying to find the right words to get through to these people. You know, there must be some words. I had hoped that maybe in Al-Anon you had a script or at least a list of things I needed to do to make them stop, make them realize how destructive their behavior was. I didn't really spend a lot of time on the power greater than myself, because as I said, I thought I was okay in that respect. I still continued to attend the church that I was attending ever since I was old enough to go to church. You know, it was the way I was brought up, and I continued to use that idea of a higher power. I have been reading Courage to Change for 24 years. I mean, I read it every day, and I never get tired of reading it every day. And I always find things I never knew were in there. And I did find something on step two that really, it made me laugh to think that I had read this for all those years and I never really noticed it before. It's it's on page, which page it's on? Okay. It's on page 323, November 18th. To me, the second step talks about being restored to sanity. It covers more than the ability to function responsibly and realistically. A sane way of life also includes the willingness to play, to take a break, to cultivate a hobby. I suppose I think of humor as an especially appealing hobby. It takes no special equipment, doesn't require travel, and never falls out of fashion. When I have a good laugh, I know that my higher power is restoring some of my sanity. How simple. How simple that sounds, you know? When I got to Al-Anon and started working with a sponsor, one of the first things she asked me is, "What do you like to do for yourself?" And I could not name one thing that I like to do for myself. "Oh, well, my husband likes to do this. And sometimes as a family, we do that. Well, what do you like to do? Anything?" She said, "How about bubble baths?" I said, "Oh, no, not bubble baths. He thinks that's foreplay. So we're not going on the bubble bath. No, that's not going to work for me." So, but I couldn't name anything else. And that was the truth. I really didn't have anything else. But I never thought of that as being insane. It's so funny to look back at the person I was and the things that I believed when I came into Al-Anon and how much that has changed, you know? I like this reading because it talks about humor, and I think that that's so important. It was one of the reasons that I chose my first sponsor, you know? I was at a meeting, and I had in my mind certain people I was considering asking to be my sponsor. And there was a newcomer at the meeting who started to share and said her name and started to cry. And she said, "I can't even say anything except my name." And the person who became my sponsor was sitting next to her. And she put her arm around her and said, "But you said your name so well." And I knew right then that was the person I needed to ask to be my sponsor. So she and I went on quite a journey after I started these steps. I wanted to talk about step three, because step three, I think my experience with step three kind of wraps up steps one, two, and three. I got to a point where I was just living with my husband. My older son went to college, and he never really lived in our house after he went away to college. You know, he came back to visit the first summer, but that was it. You know, he never really came back. He was on his own, and he's still, you know, he is still on his own, living his life, and he's doing all right. He, you know, he's married and he has two children, and, you know, I see him regularly. We have a very good relationship. I'm very happy to be a part of his life. My younger son, as I said, he started his journey with alcohol and drugs. Actually, when he was 12, he started drinking and he started using drugs by 13. And he's not clean and sober today. He's 37 years old. He's homeless. He lives in one of the encampments in Oakland, but I do talk to him and I do see him. And I am powerless over his life. I know that with all my heart. But my story with step three, I think, has more to do with my relationship with my husband. Something I noticed about him sometime after I had been in Al-Anon was he was a person who always needed to have an adversary in his life. He wasn't happy if he didn't have somebody who was the villain that he had to battle. When he was working, it could be people at work, it could be his boss, you know, whatever. For a while, it was our older son who he didn't understand. And he just thought he assumed that he was never going to amount to anything. What can I say? he was wrong. our younger son was his favorite, and he spoiled him awfully, to the detriment of his older brother. He always set the boys up against one another. They were 5 years apart, but he set them up. I don't think he realized it, but he constantly, the things that he did, set them against each other. But when our younger son started with alcohol and drugs, and the situation deteriorated over the years, we got to a point where my ex-husband kicked our son out of the house because he was selling drugs. And people were coming and going from our house in the middle of the night and everything. And he said, you can't live here anymore. So he was gone. So it was just the two of us. And then he retired. So then it was really just the two of us. I went back to work. It was just a local job. I worked in a bookstore and I had so much fun. You know, I used to tell people that my life is wonderful. I'm very happy until I have to go home, you know, and it was just, no matter what kind of mood I walked in on, by the time we sat down to have supper in the evening, it was always something that I had done wrong, something that I caused. I was the source of most of the trouble in the world. In fact, in case you didn't know, I was one of the causes of the Vietnam War. I didn't realize it, but I was. So I was constantly in the crosshairs. That's how it felt when I was at home. I didn't recognize my feelings when I first came to Al-Anon. But by the time that my husband retired, I had been in the program long enough that I was starting to recognize. I could start naming the things that I was feeling. I was unhappy, but I was also scared. I was living with a great deal of fear. And there was reason to be afraid. My ex was a very unhappy man. He was a Vietnam vet who was diagnosed with PTSD, and he chose never to have any counseling or to do anything about that problem. He abused alcohol. And after he retired, he had no hobbies, nothing at all to do. So he would drink all day. And it got to the point where I never saw him when he hadn't had an awful lot to drink, when he and I were not in the same reality. There was no place for me to talk to him. in a rational manner. That just simply wasn't available. And in fact, I stopped trying because that was insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I saw myself at one particular evening where he said something and I was about to say what I always say. And I realized that if I did that, it was going to end up in a very unpleasant scene again. So I just decided not to do what I usually do. And I just turned around and did something else and it didn't happen. So guess what? It works. It works if you work it right. And I had to find that out by doing things that were wrong and getting consequences and learning a lesson. The violence was the thing that was hard to live with because it escalated. You know, he was such an unhappy person. I found something on step three that I thought really spoke to me. It's in this book, Discovering Choices. And it fits in with my story about this relationship and about step three and the work that I needed to do on step three to get me to a different place. It's from page, let's see. Of course, it's a page with no number on it. 217, I believe. 217, down at the bottom. Step three can be a challenge, can be challenging, though it offers a rich reward, a serenity that grows deeper over time. We are ready to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. When we begin to understand the difference between what is within our power to change and what is not, much of our frustration comes from our unwillingness to accept what we cannot change. Much of our fear comes from our inability to force a solution to our problem. Step three is an opportunity to remind ourselves that we can let go and let God. We can let go of our frustrated wish to control the future as well as our futile inner resistance to the present moment. Instead, we can find peace of mind in bringing our will and our lives into harmony with a power greater than ourselves. So the first thing I needed to do was find a different higher power. The one that I had for so long seemed really far away. You know, I felt like this higher power was so busy with world events, you know, with wars and famine and floods and big things. The one that I had, I didn't feel I could turn to with my problems. You know, it just seemed like I was just an insignificant presence. So I needed a different higher power. That one wasn't working for me. I was in a situation where I was afraid to do anything. The fear was so great. I didn't see how I could move it. I was afraid to stay. I was afraid to move forward. It was just like the old dark hall that we hear so much of in Al-Anon, you know, where you can't see anything. You don't know which way to turn. So I needed a different higher power. I needed one that would always be there for me, that one that really cared. I needed a higher power who had a better plan than the one I have for my life. And that's where the process of coming to believe comes in. I was living with this situation that was increasingly violent. I mean, there were repeated threats to kill me. The very first time that it happened, I walked in a walk-in closet to get my coat, and he was standing in the closet with a gun in his hand. And I just grabbed my coat and left. And as luck would have it, I was going to an Al-Anon meeting. And when I said what happened to me, people didn't want me to go home. But I had not yet come to believe that I had a choice to not go home. I believed I needed to go home. And I also believe that he really wouldn't do it. You know, he wouldn't do that. That's not the person that I fell in love with and married. He would not do that. He was a good person, basically. He was a sick person. You know, he suffers from alcoholism. So I did go back, but I did it while he was not drinking as much. And there was times when I could speak to him, and I told him that I could not stay in the house as long as there were guns in the house. And so his decision was to give the guns to our son, who was my other qualifier. So that's where his guns went. He was not living at home, and he was not violent toward me anyway. I don't know, you know, what he was doing on his own, but he was not violent toward me. After that, I lived with still the constant threats to kill me. And there were other ways to kill me that he loved to talk about, you know, axes and knives and sledgehammers, things like that, you know. And it got to the point where I was numb, you know, it was just constant, but still so miserable, was so afraid that I was, if I moved, I'd move in the wrong direction. How do I know? So I had an opportunity to go to a 12-step retreat, a weekend that was all 12-step program. And I had a personal conference with the presenter of the retreat. And I said to her, how do you know if fear is a feeling or if fear is a defect of character? And she said to me, fear is a defect of character when it keeps you from trusting your higher power. Well, I think that's about the spot that I was. I was at a spot where I was so afraid that I needed to, I couldn't even trust my higher power. So I would pray, please help me, just help me. Someone in Al-Anon suggested that I do this thing called the fear inventory. And so I did. I took my journal, and at the top of a page, I write, God help me. And then I would write something that I was afraid of. Underneath that, I would write, how is this affecting my life? And what can I do about it? So I wrote down all of those things that really scared me. And most of them, there wasn't anything that I could do about. You know, one of them was that I was afraid my son was going to be arrested because he was selling drugs. And guess what? He was. And we all survived. But, you know, there wasn't anything I could do about it. He was on his own trajectory, and I just was powerless, really. So, but anyway, doing that really did give me some peace of mind, you know, having completed that. And then sitting there and thinking about the fact that these things that I'm afraid of that I can't do anything about. And so there came a time, you know, in my daily life where I was at work. And I had a call from my husband. There were just two of us. It was a small bookstore, you know, and we used to buy books too. And what we had were boxes of books, and we were sitting on the floor, the two of us, because it was an estate and people wanted to, the heirs wanted to sell the books to us. And we were going through looking to see which books we wanted to buy. And he called and he said, I want the checkbook. You have the checkbook and I want the checkbook. I'm going to come over there with my gun and shoot you because you took the checkbook. I got a new gun today and I'm going to come over and shoot you. And my coworker said, how can you live like this? And we both looked up and he was walking in the door of the bookstore and we both thought we were going to die. But he didn't have a gun. He just wanted the checkbook and I gave it to him. And she said, you can't keep living like this. And I said, you're right. I can't keep living like this. And I called a lawyer who I had spoken to and he said, hang up and call the police. And I did. And I called the police And I never went back except with the police to get my things. And then I never went back.
Linda, I'm so sorry to interrupt. It's a 5-minute gentle reminder.
Thank you, Jules. So I went through the process of being separated and eventually being divorced from this man. It took 2 years. And I was afraid almost the whole time, but I kept moving forward. I don't know how I knew to do certain things, but I did. And anything I wasn't sure about, I went to an Al-Anon meeting and I said, I don't know how to do this. And somebody there did, you know, and somebody would talk to me after the meeting and give me some very practical suggestions. And I had so much love around me. The people in the program were just incredibly supportive. I feel like my story has a happy ending, you know? As I said, my son is homeless and I can't do anything about it. I'm sorry, because it's hard to see him the way he is and to see how impacted his health has been. We live in 4 years where he sleeps on the sidewalk next to a street in Oakland. And I just, you know, my God box is full of little pieces of paper that have his name on it. So I have to keep reminding myself that I am powerless. When I was new to Al-Anon, I was really naive, you know, and I thought that you did the steps once and then you had it, you know, you could graduate. I didn't realize how often I need to go back to steps 1, 2, and 3. Early on, I heard an Al-Anon speaker call steps 1, 2, and 3 the Al-Anon walls, because you get to do them over and over, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So I think of that often because I often find myself there. It amazes me that I've been coming to Al-Anon for so long and I can still find myself at step 1 on a regular basis. And the good part is, because I've been coming to Al-Anon for so long, I recognize that I'm at step 1 once again, and I need to be, you know, I need to work step 1 and admit I'm powerless. And I know that I have an awesome higher power, because I never could have dreamed of the life that I have today. I have a wonderful life. You know, I live in a retirement community and I think of it as a playground for old people. You know, we've been in lockdown again since January, but when we're not in lockdown, I can be as busy as I wanted to be. I mean, I could have several things to do every single day if I choose to. And I just think that I never could have imagined this life for myself. In fact, I know that if I ever would have heard this or seen a crystal ball that this would be my life, I might not have gone back to Al-Anon, because it would have been too scary for the person that I was way back then. You know, I would not have even wanted to. But I'm very happy that the people in the first meeting that I went to kept telling me, keep coming back. And they listened to me. And it was so nice to have somebody listen to me at last. And I just have the most awesome higher power that you can imagine. And my higher power is here all the time. And thank you, Al-Anon. And thank you, everybody, for coming today and letting me tell my story.
Thank you so much, Linda. What a powerful share and a beautiful example of resiliency. I believe we're going to take everybody off mute and we can just say thank you to Linda verbally. Thank you so much.
Hey,
thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Linda. That was amazing.